Shale, how's your dog Primo?
Primo's the best. Why do you ask?
Does it feel good to have an inverter named after your dog?
It does. I'm pretty sure that's where it came from. He deserves it, to be honest.
Or is your dog named after the inverter?
No, listen, my dog came first.
That inverter is the Primo Gen 24 Plus from Fronius. And Fronius is a supporter of the Interchange. Fronius now gives you more control over your solar energy than ever before with that versatile hybrid inverter, the Primo Gen 24 Plus. Whether you're storing solar power, integrating energy storage, looking for backup power, or all of the above, the Primo Gen 24 Plus has you covered. It comes with AC outlet terminals that provide solar power during outages without a battery, ensuring important loads in your house can continue to operate if the grid fails. Want the latest in tech plus peace of mind? Learn more at fronius.us/PV. That's FRONIUS.US/PV. This is The Interchange, conversations on the future of energy from Green Tech Media. I'm Stephen Lacey in Boston. Welcome to the show. Shale Khan is my co-host and my compatriot. He is the managing director at Energy Impact Partners. He's out there in Berkeley, California. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great, Stephen. How are you?
Excellent. This week, we're talking green hydrogen. Less than 1% of all hydrogen produced today comes from renewables. Is that about to change? The VP of Siemens Middle East just called green hydrogen the new oil in the coming decades. Insert joke here about hydrogen being the fuel of the future and always will be. A lot of big companies like Siemens and oil majors are taking a serious look at the resource once again. In an era of extremely cheap renewables that increasingly need to be curtailed during certain times of the day, hydrogen production could finally be an attractive use. Here with us to understand what's different about today's hydrogen hype is Ben Gallagher. He's an expert on emerging tech at Wood Mackenzie. Ben follows technologies like hydrogen, carbon capture and storage, and direct air capture. He's with us from the WoodMac office in New York. Hey, Ben, how are you?
Hey, Stephen. How's it hanging?
Good. You know, I knew you, Shale and I both knew you back when you were a senior analyst all about solar, and now it's carbon capture and hydrogen. And all of a sudden everyone's talking about hydrogen again. Shale, I'm curious, as you think through what utilities and energy majors are thinking through, are you seeing this resurgence in discussion of hydrogen?
Definitely. I mean, I think, and Ben can speak to this probably more than I can, I think it is emanating primarily, first and foremost, from Europe, more than from North America at the moment. But I was thinking about this the other day. It feels to me like every decade, or at least the past few decades, there's been like some one technology that has captured the industry's attention more than any other. So I would say in like the 2000s, it was probably solar. That was when, 2000 to 2010 was when solar really started to pick up. And so a lot of folks who had spent time in the semiconductor market or spent time in the wind market started paying a lot of attention to solar. Then in the 2010s, the last decade, it was obviously storage, lithium ion batteries in particular, and maybe some other chemistries as well. And like there was this mass migration of talent, in addition to of interest, of actual people who went from like solar companies to storage companies. And we're obviously at the beginning of this decade, but just based on like the picking up on the gestalt of the chatter in the industry right now, I do wonder whether this next decade is going to be hydrogen and whether it's just going to be the topic of conversation for a fairly long period of time, or whether, as you jokingly alluded to at the beginning, Stephen, whether it's going to be forever the fuel of tomorrow. But there's definitely like increased hype around it right now, which is why I'm excited to talk about it and learn a little bit more, because I do think it's so nascent that like nobody really truly understands what's going on here. So Ben, let me start you with a pretty basic question. Define green hydrogen for us and distinguish it from other forms of hydrogen production that we already use today.
Sure. So green hydrogen is hydrogen that's produced via electrolysis by renewable energy. So what is electrolysis? Electrolysis is the method of applying electricity and splitting a molecule is split into its constituent parts. So for instance, with water, you would split water molecule into two hydrogen atoms and to one oxygen atom. So as Stephen alluded to in the beginning of the show, less than 1% of the global hydrogen market is produced in this method via electrolysis by renewable energy. So what is the remainder? So in most OECD countries, in Europe and the United States, hydrogen is primarily produced by natural gas via a process called steam methane reforming. Conversely, in China, the vast majority of hydrogen that's produced there is through gasification of coal. So why is all this hydrogen being produced, and what's the purpose for it? So this hydrogen, either hydrogen from natural gas, which some people call gray hydrogen, or hydrogen from coal, which some people call brown hydrogen, that is a required input in a vast majority of different either industrial processes or products. So kind of the only real way to decarbonize that required hydrogen, which comes from either natural gas or coal, is through this green hydrogen.
One thing I think that on the outside isn't super obvious is people talk about hydrogen as potentially a solution to a problem in electricity, which is we add lots of renewables, we end up with curtailment and cheap electricity some of the time, and then we have this seasonal issue where there's extra demand and less generation other times, and hydrogen is sort of like posed as a solution to that. But there's this other side of it, which is there's an existing market for hydrogen, which is what you're just describing, for which a newly hydrogen produced through a different method could just be a drop-in replacement for the existing market. I guess the first question is, like, how big is that existing market for hydrogen as it stands today?
The existing global hydrogen market is around 70 million metric tons per year. In fact, because this hydrogen market is so carbon intensive, globally, if it was a country, global hydrogen production would be equivalent to like the sixth largest CO2 emitter globally. So it's a very large market. I did not know before diving into this research that there were, you know, standalone distinct hydrogen pipelines in the United States and Europe, and that there really was this giant industry that I was completely unaware of.
And what are people using it for?
So hydrogen is required in refining of a variety of petrochemicals. It is a source of heat and an input in steel manufacturing. It's required in a variety of different chemical products like polysilicon to make solar wafers and cells uses hydrogen. Float glass uses hydrogen. But a really big market, an important market, is it's a required input for ammonia, which makes fertilizer.
So that's a good segue then into, let's talk about, as people imagine using lots of this excess cheap renewable energy to via electrolysis to produce green hydrogen someday in the future, they talk about a bunch of different applications, some of which are what you've described the current state of affairs is for the hydrogen market, some of which appear to be sort of like new applications for hydrogen. Can you talk about sort of in the future how hydrogen proponents imagine all this new hydrogen production being used?
Yeah, sure. So that's why hydrogen is so buzzworthy right now, because the total addressable market is gigantic. Hydrogen can be used to power a fuel cell, which can power a passenger vehicle, a truck, a van. It can be used and mixed with captured CO2 potentially to form syn fuels to power airplanes, ships. It also can be used to be potentially injected directly into the existing natural gas infrastructure. So you could have, you know, the natural gas that you turn on in your kitchen to cook something that could be potentially blended with hydrogen. So let's say 10% hydrogen, 90% natural gas, or even theoretically 100% hydrogen. Hydrogen could be mixed with natural gas to spin turbines to produce electricity. Or it could be also used with much larger fuel cells to produce electricity itself. So there's all these potential end uses, which are quite gigantic. And that's why sort of the techno-optimists have been so keen on hydrogen, you know, since the early 2000s. So there's a lot of potential end uses here, and that's why it's so exciting. But the green hydrogen market has been more or less, you know, non-existent for a long period of time now.
Well, coming up, we'll get into what could break this market wide open. First, a quick word about our sponsor, Fronius. You know, you may not be able to have your own fuel cell in your house, but you can have solar with the newest inverter from Fronius, the Primo Gen 24 Plus. It can help transform your home's energy security. It's this versatile hybrid inverter that delivers long-lasting backup power during outages. Thanks to multi-flow technology and integrated backup power, this inverter can keep supplying energy loads and charge a battery at the same time. It's really simple to install in your home as well, so you can commission it right on your smartphone and connect it to your smart home. With a variety of integrated features like energy management, data communication, and basic grid backup, the Primo Gen 24 Plus offers uniquely flexible solutions for your home's solar energy supply. Find out more at fronius.us/PV.
All right, so, you know, there's a bunch of excitement about hydrogen, green hydrogen, because of the multitude of large total addressable markets to go after: gas infrastructure, heavy duty transportation, grid flexibility, ammonia, and other industrial production, all this stuff. And yet that's sort of in contrast to the existing green hydrogen market today, which is virtually nil. And so presumably that is largely just an economic challenge, right? It's just not cost competitive yet. So, but we do have this, and I want to talk more about those economics specifically, but before we do, there's kind of an emerging wave of companies now that are trying to pursue green hydrogen. Of all these market opportunities, where do they tend to start? Are they starting by saying, well, let's just be a drop-in replacement for ammonia production because that's where the existing hydrogen market is today? Or are they saying, let's go after something entirely new and use hydrogen to replace some other fuel?
The new reality that is setting in, especially for European, you know, Fortune 500 or global Fortune 500 companies that are required to have hydrogen as an input for their product, and with more folks being aware of or having to confront with losses due to curtailment or negative power price events, that these two things are sort of coming to a head simultaneously. That's what I think is really behind this, more so than anything. In the early 2000s, there was a lot of, you know, movement towards how hydrogen could be a way to decarbonize mobility, meaning primarily passenger cars. But with lithium-ion batteries becoming, you know, so much more cost-effective, they've kind of been pushed out of the discussion. So there are still hydrogen fueling stations being deployed in Germany and France and the UK and California, and there are really aggressive targets for those fueling stations in East Asia. But it's much more of a sort of diverse set of industrial end uses than just decarbonizing mobility.
So let's get into the hard numbers here, because I think this is where the rubber hits the road. There's obviously this big opportunity, and there's this, I think, looming benefit that green hydrogen will receive in the form of an abundance of cheap renewables certain times of the year. But does that mean then it will actually be cost competitive, and with what and for what application? So I guess start us with kind of the highest level. Where's the cost of producing green hydrogen today, and what are the big factors that swing it in one direction or another?
Okay. So if you look at the total levelized cost of hydrogen, much like the levelized cost of electricity or energy, because this electrolyzer is splitting water molecules with the input of renewable electricity, it's the key parameter here is what are the cost of electricity. About 75% of the cost, the levelized cost of hydrogen, is in the cost of electricity. Number two is the frequency that you use it, your utilization rate, which I've called load factors. So if you're only using your electrolyzer just to mitigate negative power price events or for curtailment in the summer months in California, then your economics are greatly compromised as well. So it's hard to tell you what the costs of green hydrogen are in a given year, in a given market, without kind of firming up those two parameters first.
Yeah, no, I think that is a key point, and also that those two factors sort of push against each other. So on one hand, you say 7 cents per kilowatt hour. Anybody who's been tracking PPA prices for wind or solar would probably quickly respond, well, you know, solar PPA prices are 3 cents a kilowatt hour now, or 4 cents, or whatever it is. So maybe it's way cheaper. But you're also making the point that solar operates at, even if you could just soak up all that solar power, solar operates at, what, a 30% capacity factor. So at best, then you're still only getting 30% utilization of your green hydrogen electrolyzer. So what you really need to do is figure out how to get kind of like 24/7 renewables so that you can operate your electrolyzer all the time, which is a similar set of challenges to what, say, Google is facing right now as they try to procure 24/7 renewables, which is just like time matching to the production of renewable energy. You need a flat block of power, basically.
So you need solar plus storage plus an electrolyzer, basically. So the costs sound pretty high.
Well, just to give you a little bit of a range here, if we assume like a PPA price of around $30 per megawatt hour, if we're running our electrolyzer around 10% of all the hours during the year, you're looking at around $10.40 per kilogram of green hydrogen. If you're operating your electrolyzer at half of the hours during the year, which is extremely aggressive, with completely free electricity, you're at $1.78 per kilogram of hydrogen. So just to give you a range, so currently in the U.S., the price of SMR hydrogen, steam methane reform hydrogen, the hydrogen that is most ubiquitous here in the United States and that's made from natural gas, that price ranges from around $1 to $1.50 per kilogram of hydrogen. So even if you're assuming really aggressive utilization rates and free electricity, the economics still don't pair with the steam methane reformed hydrogen that is currently used.
What about the cost of electrolysis itself? Is there an argument that, you know, everybody predicted the cost of solar 15 years ago, and nobody thought it was going to be as cheap as it is today? And that's for any number of reasons, but a big part of which is just the market scaled up and costs came down and down and down. Is there a possibility the same thing could happen with electrolysis, where just as this market scales, it becomes cheaper and cheaper to electrolyze? And so, you know, despite the fact that your electricity doesn't cost zero and you're not manufacturing 50% of the year, you can still get to cost competitiveness? Or is it just that so much of the cost is comprised of those two factors you described before that it almost doesn't matter what the cost of electrolysis is?
So one of the units of measure that we can use to track the green hydrogen market is in megawatts. The capacity of electrolyzers also is in megawatts. So from 2000 to 2010, no year saw more than 2 megawatts of annual deployments. So starting in 2017, 2018, we started to see much more meaningful deployments of globally 44 and 45 megawatts of electrolyzers for green hydrogen production were deployed in 2017 and 2018, respectively. Last year was a record breaker at 94 megawatts. Most electrolyzer manufacturers, and there are a handful, but the vast majority of them would characterize themselves as startups. The vast majority of electrolyzer manufacturers do not have a manufacturing capacity greater than 40 megawatts of electrolyzers per year. So that means if Shell comes at a company's door, knocks on it and says, hey, we want to completely decarbonize our hydrogen source at this petrochemical refinery, We need 200 megawatts of electrolyzers for that. No company today can fill that order in 1 year. Most electrolyzers are manufactured, at least their proprietary components, are manufactured by hand. This equipment is assembled by hand. When you talk to electrolyzer vendors, they say they need anywhere from 300 to 500 megawatts of annual volume in electrolyzers in order to justify an investment in automated manufacturing.
So, but that's exactly my point, right? So we're clearly so early on in the journey of this market. How much, and you know, what's happened in other markets, similar markets, is subsidies have arrived or government programs, things like that, that support the very beginnings of the market when it's clearly not economic, but can start to get you up the scaling curve. And as time goes on, it becomes more automated and larger scale and so on, gets cheaper and cheaper and cheaper. So is the expectation that that is what could happen with electrolyzers? And I guess the question I was asking before is, if it does, how far can we picture that going in reducing the costs? Or is it really all still tied up in cost of electricity and utilization rate?
Yeah, we could see a rapid cost reduction similar to solar and lithium ion battery manufacturing. That's definitely a strong possibility. With that being said, the cost of the electrolyzer itself and its installation is only around 15% of the overall levelized cost. So while scaling and automated manufacturing and electrolyzer production will have a material impact on lifetime costs of green hydrogen production, it's not the be-all and end-all. Essentially, the history or trajectory of green hydrogen market will be 100% tied to the trajectory of renewables deployments and the cost of electricity generation by renewables.
So I guess I'm trying to figure out, why are we having this conversation? And I mean we in the broadest sense of the word. You're obviously writing this piece of analysis because you're reacting to what people are interested in, what large industrial companies are interested in, what renewable energy companies are interested in, and you wrote a great piece of research. And we, the three of us, are having this conversation because we're reacting to some kind of narrative that green hydrogen is becoming a thing. But as you've outlined, it's still extraordinarily nascent, it's very limited, and it's still anybody's guess how dramatically this takes off. I mean, you do show that the electrolysis market is going to see pretty significant growth, but that's off of a very small base of deployments. So why are we having this conversation if the applications are still so limited? What is going to change, or what might change?
Things have already changed. In a post-Paris world, especially in the European Union, in order to produce petrochemical products or ammonia, you will need to find a way to decarbonize your stream of hydrogen. Full stop. So these large companies, they're more concerned about how can we execute our business, how can we produce our products, you know, 10 years down the road, 20 years down the road, when we are forced to source hydrogen from a resource that's not carbon intensive.
What do you think, Shale? Is this coming from the industrial players, or is it coming from the need to do something with excess renewable energy?
I'm sure it's some of both, but I mean, look, this is my sort of big takeaway from this conversation, and Ben, you can tell me if it feels wrong. It seems to me that as we stand today, the hard reality is that when you look at the current economics of green hydrogen production, they're generally pretty far from being competitive with the alternative, which is SMR-based brown or gray hydrogen. And, you know, on the trajectory that you would generally expect, even with some somewhat aggressive assumptions, you know, there you might get to the point where it's cost competitive in a decade or so in certain locations, but not others. And that's a challenging precipice to stand upon for green hydrogen. But I guess the counterargument feels to me to be there's a big push for it. There's a push for it that comes from the form of a lot of companies that view green hydrogen as a solution to whatever their problem is. We have to produce ammonia. We have natural gas pipelines that need to be decarbonized. We have a natural gas generating plant that we are already planning. We need to decarbonize heavy-duty transportation, whatever it might be. There's a bunch of companies that are going to be pushing it from an R&D perspective. They are also going to be advocating for policy that is probably going to result in some subsidies and, you know, sort of non-dilutive capital available to get the smallest scale, to get us from the tens of megawatts to the hundreds of megawatts over the next few years. And you've got this sort of big secular trend pushing in the right direction, which is renewables getting cheaper and cheaper, and there being increasing amounts of negative power prices or zero power prices. And then the final piece that obviously makes could make green hydrogen more competitive relative to gray or brown would be carbon pricing. So like if all those things happen simultaneously over the course of the next, say, 5 to 7 years, then you start to maybe build momentum around a market where you get a sight line to cost competitiveness. And though that might sound sort of fanciful, I would say I do think there's a parallel to be drawn to solar here. And then if you had looked at solar when it was $15 a watt to get installed and said, well, it needs to be $1 a watt to be cost competitive, you would have thought people were crazy for imagining that we could get there. And we did. So, you know, I realize it's not exactly the same situation, but I think that in my mind is the path to glory for green hydrogen. The question is one, like, will it happen? And two, how long does it take? Because it's definitely not happening overnight.
You're 100% right, Shale, that there are some very serious winds of policy change that are in the sails of green hydrogen. There are strong deployment targets, as I mentioned, in East Asia for hydrogen refueling stations. There are targets in France that by the mid 2020s that all fuel, 10% of all fuel is sourced from hydrogen. So there are important policy drivers here that are finally supplying meaningful, stable volumes for electrolyzer vendors in order to scale. But I think what's far more important here is the sort of commitment from these large industrial stakeholders.
What is your favorite color hydrogen? Brown, gray, blue, or green?
You know I like metal, so I wish there was a black hydrogen, but I'm going to have to go with green hydrogen.
Good answer. Ben Gallagher is a subject matter expert in carbon, an emerging technology for Wood Mackenzie's energy transition practice. He wrote a report on this subject that we've been talking about called Green Hydrogen Production. It's all about the landscape, the projects, and some of the costs we dissected. Ben, thanks so much.
Hey, thanks so much, guys. Great talking to you, and look forward to next time.
The Interchange is a co-production between Postscript Audio and Green Tech Media. Shale Khan is my co-host. We want to hear what you have to say. Are you following this market? Are you wondering if hydrogen, green hydrogen, is a reality or just more hype? Well, you know, tweet at us and we'll retweet you or respond to you. It's a great way to engage with the discussion here after you listen to the podcast. Of course, if you do like what you hear, please rate us and review us on Apple Podcasts or find us anywhere else you download your shows. I'm Stephen Lacey. This is The Interchange, conversations on the future of energy from Green Tech Media.